our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
That's if or if not I win the lottery, I will still be available to answer all of your fantasy questions.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Gruden looked like an absolute meth head when he was at that little media meeting. It was really scary, and he needs to lay off the lip gloss.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Glennon is playing like absolute garbage, and I never thought I would say, like, maybe Cutler would be a better option, but maybe Cutler would be a better option.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brentz. I'm joined tonight by Eric Mackey. How are you doing, Eric?
I was not prepared for that quick intro, but I'm doing well otherwise.
Well, sometimes I got to catch you guys off guard. Otherwise, we won't actually get down to business.
It's true. We've been doing pretty good at that.
Yeah. You and Evan can be quite distracting people. It's very, very distracting.
Well, we got a hot lotto talk going on, man. Come on. Get with it.
Well, hey there, Evan. How you doing?
I'm doing phenomenal, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. Did you win the Powerball?
I don't know yet. We will see at the end of the podcast. If that's not a cliffhanger to keep you around, then the fantasy and knowledge will be, for sure. Or me and Ben's banter.
I like our banter. It's a lot of fun. That's why they put us together.
I know.
All right, guys. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about some preseason football, but why don't we give our listeners our Twitter handles before we jump in. Eric, why don't you start?
So I can be found on Twitter at Mackey671FWFB.
And Mr. Evan?
At FWFB, or just leave a rate and review on iTunes and pretend that you're getting a hold of me, and click the 5-star because that is the send button.
I can be reached at BBrennis FWFB. Guys, why don't we just jump right on in? So far, we've been through 2 weeks of the preseason. We have had some developments and some injuries. Why don't we start with a big injury that happened during week two, and that's going to be Odell Beckham Jr.'s injury. What are your thoughts on Odell coming and being ready for week one, and does this change how you draft him at all, Eric?
So right now it looks like he's got a high ankle sprain. He's questionable, probably more like doubtful, I guess, for week one. It would give me a little more pause with him just because of the kind of player he is. Anytime you get, you know, a high ankle sprain, it's really going to affect that player pretty much a good part of the season if they come back too early. So for him, it's probably one. If I come to my pick and it's between him and Julio, I'm probably just taking Julio now. But he's still a first-round talent, but it's something you got to keep in mind that if you're drafting him, that is kind of a risk right now if he doesn't manage it properly.
Well, what about you, Evan? What are your thoughts on Odell?
I love Odell as a talent, and I think a lot of people are being scared off by this report that says that he, quote, could be in danger of missing the regular season opener, which makes sense that he could be in danger of it because it's hurt. But it just means that now there is a statistical probability that it's going to happen. I think it's more hype news than anything else. And I'm not really letting it affect me in where I would be drafting him in the first round. Like you mentioned him against Julio. If you think Julio's over the foot stuff, I mean, it's kind of, you know, what we're predicting based on last year for Julio and predicting what is kind of happening right now for Odell. And it's just, which way do you feel more strongly? But I'm not letting him slip outside of my top three wide receivers. I probably, gun to my head, and I'm a Falcons fan, I would probably take Odell over Julio. But that's just me. Ben, am I on an island there? Or
no, I'm still in the boat that I would take Odell because I feel that I'm able to believe in him to be able to make it all 16 games. I feel that even though with this injury currently, I still feel more confident that I'd get more games out of him than I would get out of Julio. And I do love Julio, but I've been hearing Adam Schefter report that he's even staying away from Julio as a top five pick, and essentially that means that you have him outside of your top three at wide receiver because basically you have Evans, Odell, and AB ahead of him. So I would say that Schefter is a pretty knowledgeable person. Now, having watched a few games, I did have Julio ahead, but I had put Julio ahead just because I felt that there was more upside there. But after going through some of the game tape and everything, I'm just not as sure as to what offensive success the Falcons will have this year compared to last year when they did have Kyle Shanahan. I still think they'll be a very good offensive team, but I have a little bit more confidence in Odell having fantasy success in a healthier season than Julio. So I think I would have to just stick with Odell ahead. Did you guys have any other points on Odell's injury or going into the season with the draft coming up?
I guess for me with Odell, if it is a true high ankle sprain, it's not really, I mean, if he's there, I'm still going to probably draft him. But it gives me a little more pause, I guess, than I had earlier, but you're still going to take him. I've had Julio ranked ahead of Odell, so far. And I guess if in my mind, I guess as far as like my rankings go, it kind of solidifies it a little bit more for me. But I mean, you're kind of mincing it really between those two guys anyway. So,
all right, well, why don't we move into another pretty big draft flow, and that's going to be talking about Ezekiel Elliott being suspended. Obviously, this news has been out for about 2 weeks' time, but we haven't really got to be able to talk about the suspension on the podcast yet. Evan, what are your thoughts on Ezekiel Elliott's suspension? How does this affect his draft value, and what does this do for Darren McFadden in drafts?
Well, obviously, Darren McFadden is just kind of this guy where he could literally go anytime after, I would say, like the fifth round, and I just wouldn't be surprised. And it's a very odd concept because, I mean, you're missing, you know, the suspension with Zeke plus the bye game. You're basically going to be without him for 7 weeks. But if you think he's going to be one of the top scorers in the preseason and you think you can coast with leagues moving more towards PPR formats and making some of the lower tier running backs more viable options that could kind of get you by in that time frame. I mean, you don't have to mess with bye weeks for the first, you know, ostensibly 4 weeks. And then, you know, you just kind of piecemeal it those last 3 weeks, you know, pair up with a, I just lost his name, a Darren McFadden or a Jacquizz Rodgers type guy. And I think you can piecemeal it together. If you can get him in the third round, I'm with it.
What about you, Eric? What are your thoughts on the suspension? Where does this affect the draft value for Ezekiel Elliott and Darren McFadden?
Well, McFadden, I mean, basically before this news came out, he was a late-round flyer at best for most teams. Right now, it's gone basically from him being around the 14th round clear up to the 8th round. I'd expect it to climb, especially with, you know, depending what happens with the decision on the 29th of August for Elliott. But realistically, I mean, the last time McFadden filled in, I mean, he was fairly productive. It's still a good line. It's a good offense for him to be in. So I don't really know that it changes the dynamic. It definitely increases his value. As far as Elliott goes, not having a player for 7 weeks is rather huge, but and kind of get your guys' thoughts on this. I've heard some other people talk about where, you know, maybe round one, depending on where he's at, you know, if you get a decent running back and then come back and pull Elliott or pull Elliott round one, then come back in round two and pull another running back that's a stud. you know, assuming Elliott would fall there, and then just sitting and riding it out to where you could have potentially two top five running backs, but you're having to wait out the end of the season. What do you guys think of that?
I mean, my personal thoughts are that it's tough to draft Elliott that early just because he's not back until week 8 at the earliest. You know, it's a little bit tough to rely on your team being able to pull all of that weight. And if you're in a league that only has three bench spots, that means you're only able to utilize two bench spots for 8 weeks of the season. That becomes tough. If there's no injury, if there's no IR on your roster, and that then is another problem right there. If this appeal is able to bring his suspension down at all, then yeah, I can understand that. But it's tough for me to be able to come and just take him as a potential first round pick or even a, you know, early second round pick because of this type of length of it. You know, he misses roughly about 38% of the season, and you can lose your league because of a pick like that if you take him too early. And if you have like an injury to one of your other top players, it makes it tough. I understand how good he can be, how high his floor can be, and how high his ceiling can be. But it just it's too much to rely on, and it forces you to be extremely careful with your other picks. You can't really take any risks. You have to go all high floor people because he won't be there, and you need to be as consistent as you can be. In regards to McFadden, I think that Evan is correct. Anywhere after round 5, you could almost take him because he's still a running back one who is going to give you very good value for the first 6 weeks that he plays, and you can't really ask for much more than that. Yeah, you can't really do much with him after the fact, but he'll still give you those top-tier weeks. And if you paired him with Ezekiel Elliott, I can maybe understand being able to take Elliott that high. But if you take Elliott that high, you better make sure that you grab McFadden.
What do you think about... I was just going to say, Alfred Morris interest either of you, or do you think he's not a factor in this?
I don't see him as a factor. The type of offense that they like to run in Dallas is it's one back, and you saw what Darren McFadden did 2 years ago when he was that main back. He gets a lion's share of the carries. They don't really rely on anyone else, and you go with one guy, he's able to catch the ball, he's able to run the ball, he's behind a good offensive line. They're going to score touchdowns. I mean, as long as Dez is able to stay healthy and be able to play out on the outside, and Dak isn't terrible and doesn't regress significantly, then you know you're going to still be able to hold value from him. So,
yeah, I guess my preference would be McFadden just because they do kind of tend to run more of a one-back offense. He's kind of a proven commodity within that offensive scheme. But, you know, it's weird with Morris because he was basically rumored to be kind of a cap casualty. Or not a cap casualty, but he was going to probably get cut after, you know, during training camp. They were trying to shop him all offseason, and now he's been kind of getting a workload in games and could spell McFadden or get into like a timeshare with it. So I think if you're in a deeper league, he may warrant a flyer at the tail end if you don't end up getting McFadden. But, you know, realistically, for me, McFadden's the guy to go after. But if it's a deep league, I might consider Morris at that point.
All right, why don't we move into another running back that is currently suspended for the first few games of the season, and that's going to be talking about Doug Martin. Evan, what have you seen out of Doug Martin this preseason, and where are you looking to try to acquire him in drafts?
Doug Martin's looked great, and I know that, you know, after watching Hard Knocks this week, I learned a couple of things other than, you know, Gruden looked like an absolute meth head when he was at that little media meeting. It was really scary, and he needs to lay off the lip gloss. But the other thing that I noticed was the Jaguars looked like absolute dog crap. So I don't know how much stock to kind of put into this Doug Martin thing, or I don't know how much stock to put into this news that he's not going to be the starting running back when he comes back. I don't buy into that. I think he's the most talented guy they have there. I don't really, you know, he seemed very humble in front of the HBO cameras about his whole rehab process. So I'm assuming those issues are behind him. And I think it's kind of the same round as Darren McFadden. Like, I think if you're after the fifth round and Doug Martin is there, I think any point in time after that is probably a reasonable time for him to go.
What about you, Eric?
Actually, I'm kind of in agreement with Evan on that as far as, like, how he's looked. He definitely seems like he's kind of matured a bit through the whole rehab process. And I think kind of what you see with Martin, I think the whole we're not going to sure if he's going to be the starter, I think that's kind of a smokescreen. He's going to be the starter when he comes back, I think. You're not, you know, he is the most talented back on that roster. No issues. He's not suspended for a significantly long time to where, you know, if you go 1-2 without him, or if, you know, say your other filler running backs don't pan out, it's not going to necessarily kill you in that season. But I think what you've seen from Doug Martin so far is, you know, not so much, you know, I don't want to run back to like, oh, it's the 2015 version, but you've kind of been hearing really good things about him, and it's kind of been that continual, just steady good news about him, which you kind of want to hear about a player like this. And I think it's kind of an important draft concept too. Kind of like with what you had with Melvin Gordon last year, where everybody was down on him and you could get a guy in the fifth round that was, you know, a higher round player, you know, coming into the season and get him at a great value. I mean, right now, if it was the fifth round, I'd have no issue pulling drafting Doug Martin at all. And honestly, I like the value that he presents this year. I think he's a guy that you could see flashes back to what he was in his most successful season. So he's a guy I'd probably try to target a little bit this year, especially if you can get him fifth round or later. I think that's a great value.
Yeah, I think if I can get him past the fifth round, I'd be happy, because I do think that he's a very talented player. And, you know, last year he didn't get any help from his offensive line. He had he basically had 1.1 yards before contact per attempt last year, which was the second lowest in the NFL. The year before, in 2015, when he had a good season, it was at 2.8. So you can see a big discrepancy in that, and that has a lot to do with the offensive line. It was the same issue basically that Marshawn Lynch had when he was playing in Seattle 2 years ago. So we have seen what it does do to running backs. It doesn't allow them to get going, and obviously he's had injuries over the last few seasons, and this year he's already missing 3 games due to suspension. Sure, it will make him start off slow, but I think if he's able to come back and play the remaining 13 games of the year, then he'd give you a good amount of value, and I don't see why they wouldn't really try to play him as much as they could.
I also really just think a strategy, like, because we're talking in the same range here, but if somewhere in the 5-7 roundish range, you went back to back and you took Doug Martin and Darren McFadden, like, I think that would be a pretty cool strategy. And if you had, like, say you started David Johnson, and then, you know, 2-3, you got 2 wide receivers, and then, well, I guess 4-5, you wouldn't really want to do it then, but say you could do it 6-7, something like that. I think that'd be a very interesting strategy.
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to try to approach things. Not that I really like handcuffing players in the draft, because it does give you very limited flexibility, at least early in the season, but this is a short enough time span that you may be able to survive with only a few roster bench spots if needed. Why don't we move into a couple of the rookie running backs that we were going to try to talk about that have impressed during the preseason. And one of them is Tariq Cohen of the Chicago Bears. Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about Cohen and why you like him so much?
So, Cohen came out of college with the nickname the Human Joystick, and if you haven't had a chance to kind of watch any film on this guy, I definitely encourage you to do so. He's a small back. He's generously listed at about 180 pounds. He's 5'6", so he's a really small, compact running back. But he's not just one of those that you can just have him where he's running all outside all the time. He actually has a fairly good presence going through the line. Chicago's actually got a fairly decent offensive line, and I know he's behind Jordan Howard, but I could definitely see him being utilized kind of as a change of pace back. You could see him possibly getting split out as the season moves on, just because their wide receiver core is kind of a mess right now too, just to give him kind of a more dynamic playmaker. You know, he's just a very fast, explosive back that has, in my mind, a pretty high ceiling. I would fully expect him to be the number two back in that offense, just because, you know, we kind of know what Kadeem Carey is at this point. Benny Cunningham's not doing anything, and kind of the way Jeremy Langford's been, he's probably going to end up getting cut. So I think he's a nice... I wouldn't necessarily handcuff him to Jordan Howard, but I think he'd be a good late-round flyer just to see what ends up happening with him if he does solidify a more consistent role within the offense.
What are your thoughts on the Human Joystick, Evan?
Sorry, that just makes me laugh every time I hear Human Joystick because I'm a six-year-old. So I agree that, you know, the depth of the Chicago running back core is, you know, leaving a lot to be desired. But I don't really understand how, you know, I'm skeptical of Jordan Howard producing value in an offense like this. You don't think that Chicago would be a weight. I mean, and I definitely understand the value that you're getting him at, which is free right now. Free 99, hard to argue with that. But, man, I just don't want to go anywhere near this Bears offense. And I don't know if that makes me a terrible person that, you know, you never want to cross anybody completely off your list. But this is one stock that I'm not really looking to buy into if I'm looking to be successful this fantasy season.
Yeah, I think that he's someone to keep an eye on for keeper. And if he emerges, because the Bears do need some playmakers, and while Jordan Howard is someone who I don't expect to give up the role, it wouldn't be surprising to see come in as a change of pace back and actually provide you some value in certain leagues. And obviously, if there's an injury, then it's not like there's anyone else that would prevent him from being able to pick up a lot of work if he's able to show signs of doing good and being able to handle the workload. Especially given the offensive struggles that the Bears could have. Eric, did you have any other points to add on Cohen?
No, I think that's it. It's more just kind of a guy to kind of keep your eye on or maybe take a late-round flyer on. I mean, I could, you know, I get Evan's point as far as the Bears. That offense is going to be rather entertaining, I guess, if you want to use that comparison. But I think as far as, you know, Howard had pretty good success last year, and really they didn't have about the only difference is they had Smoke and Jay behind quarterback, and now you're running out Mike Glennon. So there's a significant drop off there. They really didn't have Alshon most of last season, a healthy Alshon most of last season. And otherwise, I mean, Howard's going to be it, so he'll definitely get tested this year. But I think because he will get tested, I think you're going to have a little bit more involvement from Cohen in that offense. So he's a guy I'd keep an eye on, or maybe take like a late-round flyer on him just to see what happens. But that's kind of my thoughts on him.
Glennon is playing like absolute garbage, and I never thought I would say, like, maybe Cutler would be a better option, but maybe Cutler would be a better option here.
Why don't we move into the next player that we're going to be talking about, and that's going to be talking about James Conner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Connor shouldn't really hold much value into this current season, other than the fact that if Le'Veon Bell doesn't play, he's the first option up. And we've seen what D'Angelo Williams has done in the past few years when Le'Veon Bell has not played. Do you expect the same type of workload and potential production out of Connor, or is this someone that you're just not looking to even use as a handcuff because of his young status? Evan.
Well, thank you for specifying who you wanted to go to there. I do think it's really interesting as far as kind of the Le'Veon holdout stuff. I agree that he would be first up. I don't think anybody's excited about, like, Fitzgerald Toussaint, maybe. I guess would that be the other option for them to go with? Yes. I think, yeah, it's... He's an interesting guy. I don't really know in redraft leagues. Like, you're taking him in 14-team redraft leagues? I'm not.
I'm probably not really looking to take him anywhere unless it's, like, unless I have, like, six bench spots, maybe. That, and it's, like, 12 to 14 teams, and you still have those six bench spots. Then I'd consider taking him with, like, a last pick, because if Le'Veon Bell does miss any time in the first few weeks of the season for any reason, and he gives you decent value, then at least you're not using a late pick on him, or you're not wasting a pick. You're basically getting as much value out of the 16th or 17th or 18th round of the draft, and that very rarely happens.
Right, and I mean, there's the contract stuff with Lev. There's also the injury stuff, and I've been vocally down on him for that, where I don't think as many people take that into consideration. It's just another thing that could give Connor value. It's not just the contract stuff. So there's probably a little more that needs to be baked into him.
What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I think if I'm the Le'Veon owner, I'm probably trying to pull Connor with my last pick. But, you know, like Evan said, I mean, there is more than just kind of the contract and the reporting. When you've had players that hold out like this or aren't participating with the team, generally when they show up, they usually suck for the first couple weeks, or they don't have that same high ceiling. And a good majority of them tend to get injured, and, you know, Bell's had soft tissue issues before. You know, so Connor, if it's like a 10-team standard or something like that, I'm probably not taking him, but I might entertain the thought if I own Le'Veon or if I was in like a 12-team, just as a flyer to kind of hold and see what happens through the first couple of weeks of the season, and then you could probably just dump him if Bell's back to where he was, and there's no issues with that. But he is an interesting player to consider, just because bigger picture, Le'Veon, there is a little bit more risk with him than there has been in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I am in that same boat, that if you draft Bell, that you're going to want to try to get him as a last round pick, just because at least it does give you that type of handcuff. And, you know, if Bell comes back and there's no issues and he doesn't miss any time, then, you know, like I said, it's a very late round pick, and those are all lotteries anyway. So you might as well try to throw a dart at the board and hope that it hits. And Connor, someone that could actually hit the board and hit the board running. So why don't we talk about another running back who is more highly regarded. He is someone that could have easily been a top five pick in the draft, and there's a lot of teams that wanted to acquire him. That's Christian McCaffrey. He's a great pass catching back. He knows how to hit the lane. He knows how to be patient behind the block. Where do you see him going in terms of draft value this year, Eric?
Right now, and especially with what he's shown in the preseason, you're probably having to pull him third round just to even have him on your team. He's a really good change of pace for this offense. The system that he's going into is fairly similar to what he ran in college, so he's pretty familiar with it. He's not having to kind of learn a lot of schemes and different things like that. So he's probably, of the rookie running backs, kind of the most advanced within the actual system he went into itself. But really, you know, just watching him, he is a very slippery back. He's had no issues running in between the tackles, which was kind of a concern of his coming into the draft, was whether he could handle that kind of interior line run. I think, and especially if you're in like a PPR league, that third round's definitely warranted. But I think he's a very interesting player, and it's probably not going to be very long before he kind of supplants Jonathan Stewart, I think, in this offense, just because he is a more complete back. He's more explosive than Stewart is. And I think he gives them a little bit more of a dynamic weapon than what they get with Stewart. So I think if you are getting him in the third round, if he's your RB2, I've got no issue with that at all.
What about you, Evan? What are your thoughts? You're a huge McCaffrey fan, and you were part of the reason that I boosted him up in my rankings after you really talked him up. And I'm really curious about what your thoughts on him are.
He's great. The film looks fantastic. I think the role is definitely going to be there. I think that a lot of people want to spin this narrative that, you know, he's not going to be a premier red zone option with big ass, you know, and literally big ass Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton still possibly being a red zone threat, but they want to limit the hits on Cam. I think McCaffrey has the explosiveness to get around anywhere, and I think he just provides a extra layer to this offense that he's going to find a way to be on the field. And like Eric said, if there's any PPR incentive in your drafts, third round, just sign me up. I'm all in on McCaffrey. And is he your favorite out of the rookie? Are you guys still high on Fournette with all of his foot stuff, or rookie running backs?
I mean, when I had done my rankings update a week ago, I still had it as Fournette, Mixon, McCaffrey, and then Cook. That was how I had him ranked. I want to see, as we get closer to the season with the Fournette injury, if that seems like it's something that will linger and will be an issue, then I'll drop him. But I do know that if he does play, I've seen what top pick running backs have done, and I know that they want to only run the ball. They have zero desire to actually do any passing, and they've come up with a good run-blocking offensive line. So I do think that Fournette would succeed. He just needs to be healthy. As for Mixon and McCaffrey, I still like the talent that Mixon has, but there are other pieces there. The thing that I worry about the most with McCaffrey, which is why I have him lower, is while I still expect him to score touchdowns, when they get in close, I don't expect him to be the person who gets those rushing opportunities. I believe that Cam and Jonathan Stewart are the people who are going to be the ideal people, and then they still have Kelvin Benjamin, who's huge, like you said, and they have Greg Olsen. So I still think that he's probably the number three catcher in the red zone and the number three running option in the red zone. So it essentially takes away from his touchdown opportunities on the season. Now, that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if he did have six or seven touchdowns, but I believe that they are going to have to be something that's maybe 15-yard catches that he's able to turn and run up the sideline, or, you know, he takes a rush and goes 10 yards or 7 yards. But those short goal to go stuff, I just don't see from him either in a pass or a run form as much as people may expect.
I could fully see them, though, using him more as a goal line option with Cam coming off of the shoulder injury and surgery. He is still going to have some goal line capability, but I think kind of with what the Panthers did in this draft, they're kind of signaling, I think, that they want to have more of a shift in that offense to where Cam's not their goal line back. You know, I mean, you look at McCaffrey and kind of how, like, the Ravens and Chargers and Patriots had utilized Danny Woodhead. I mean, that's kind of, you know, the floor comp I see with McCaffrey, but the ceiling's way higher, I think. I don't think you're going to draft him in the third round and be, you know, kind of disappointed with more of a role player. He has way too much talent and is such a good fit in that offense, I think, to really carry as much risk, I think, as a lot of people may perceive with him. But he's kind of a polarizing running back right now. Either you're really on the bandwagon with him, or you're kind of on the fence about him. But I haven't really updated my ranks to reflect this yet, but of the rookies, I think I had him third overall. I'd probably flop him and Fournette now, and probably have McCaffrey, Cook, Fournette, and then Mixon as the top four.
That's kind of where I am with it. And yeah, I'm definitely drinking the Kool-Aid and wearing the Nikes with Christian McCaffrey.
Why don't we change positions but still stay with the rookies? And why don't we talk a little bit about Deshaun Watson? He's being drafted as if he's the starter right now in fantasy leagues, but he's not. How soon do you expect him to take over the starting role in Houston, Evan?
I expect him to take over the second offensive snap of the Texans season, because I believe that he is a much better quarterback than Mr. Tom Savage, and I believe that he could bring a lot more to the Texans table as far as like Lamar Miller. And definitely where I kind of wanted to steer this conversation was that if Deshaun Watson started all 16 games, how do you think that would change the ranking of DeAndre Hopkins as we have it right now? Because I'm not sure how much of his projection we're factoring in for Savage, or for when we're factoring in Watson to take over. So if whoever has thoughts on the subject, I would be interested in hearing those.
So I think for me, I'm kind of running right now my rank on Hopkins as if Savage is starting. He's just outside my top 10. I think kind of what you see, the comp between the two, Savage kind of will make the throws he needs to make. He's got a fairly decent deep ball capability, which is kind of something that Hopkins does excel at. He's a good 50-50 ball wide receiver. But the thing with Savage that you don't get is the ability to create something out of nothing. When the play breaks down, Savage is basically just a statue back there, and he gets destroyed. With Deshaun Watson, the hard part with him, and it kind of depends which way that Houston ends up going with their overall offense. I mean, right now they've made Savage the starter. Watson can actually make something out of nothing, but he also misses the stuff that he generally should be connecting on. So I think until you either see Tom Savage just completely implode like Osweiler did last year, you're probably not going to see Deshaun until the later part of the season is kind of how I see things. If they decide to give him run, I don't think it's going to be before week 8 at the earliest.
I think that it helps DeAndre Hopkins a lot if Deshaun Watson takes over, because it's like Eric said, Savage is the statue back there. If the pressure comes and the pocket breaks down, and you know, Watson's still young, but I still think that Watson has more overall talent than what Tom Savage does. And this isn't a knock on Tom Savage, because he at least was able to help give Hopkins better value than what Brock Osweiler did. But, you know, I'm pretty sure the ghost of Brett Favre could give more fancy value to DeAndre Hopkins than what Brock Osweiler did. I'd like to see what Watson's able to do, but I still can't get around drafting him in a 2QB league because I don't know when he's going to take over. You know, if they're winning games that maybe aren't huge offensive games, but they're still winning with Tom Savage at quarterback, they may not make a move for the first few weeks. And you can't just keep Deshaun Watson on your team if he's not even playing. So I can't get behind the people drafting him until we actually see that he's named one of the starters.
I mean, I think part of what you want to take into context with the two is the division that they play in. Yeah, you've got Jacksonville, Indy, and Tennessee. Realistically, you're probably going to end up having whoever wins that division have like a 9-7 record, which Houston's defense, especially coming into this season now that they're healthy again, realistically could carry the team. So from a game manager perspective, you could probably see Savage get way more run just because they don't want, you know, the capability, I guess, to kind of lose the game. You know what you're going to get and put it in the hands of the defense. So realistically, I think that kind of factors into part of it too, where I expect Savage, I think, to get a lot more run than I think a lot of people think initially.
I think that Deshaun Watson, he wasn't particularly sharp in the second game, but what he did do is he did put in another touchdown on the ground. And what I think would be a very interesting thing is if you kind of look at Lamar Miller's red zone production, what possibly could happen if they add another threat like Watson down there, and how that could kind of kill some of his numbers. But I think definitely sooner than week 8, either by hook or by crook, you'll probably be seeing Watson.
Why don't we move into the wide receiver for Detroit, Kenny Golladay. What are your thoughts on Golladay going forward, Eric?
So Golladay's kind of been an interesting kind of late round target, just as kind of a speculative ad. He's kind of showed kind of in that first preseason game, just kind of the capability that he actually has as a receiver. He's a little bit more of kind of a possession guy. To the extent where he's not going to really outrun anybody, but he's a good, rather big framed receiver that can go up and get the ball, contest at the catch. And kind of the nice part with his fit in the offense is, depending on the scheme that Detroit ends up running, if he continues to perform, realistically, he could end up running out with either the wide receiver one or starting out as a wide receiver two, and they'd move Golden Tate back inside to more of his slot role that he had. I think for that offense, especially with the fit with Matthew Stafford, and just how many times they're probably going to have to throw the ball again this year, I like him as kind of a late-round flyer with fairly good upside given the offensive system that he's in and kind of what he's already shown in the first couple preseason games as a player.
What about you, Evan?
I think Golladay is getting hype this preseason because of the highlight reel catches, which are, you know, very impressive, don't get me wrong. The fact that people are going back and combing over the statistics and they're kind of nitpicking on Marvin Jones, who not just the condensed version of the Lions game. I watched like all of it, and they were talking about the connection between Marvin Jones and Matthew Stafford and kind of their little bromance and how that needed to be rekindled and whatnot. Marvin made a lot of nice plays. With Bolden leaving, there's a lot of speculation about where those targets are going to go, how they're going to get absorbed. Like, don't get me wrong, I understand why we're talking about Kenny Golladay, but I don't necessarily, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Golladay is back on waiver wires by week 3. And, you know, those guys definitely have the ability to hit. That's why they're lottery tickets. It's just, I think there's more people want to be the first ones there as opposed to something actually being there.
For my thoughts on him, it's a bit of mixed feelings for me, just because I'd like to believe that he could give us some value, and I'd like to think that he could be someone who's worth a sleeper pick, and I do think that he'll be the number 3 when the preseason is said and done, but at the same point in time, I'm not exactly sure what type of value that really brings. I still think that when you have Marvin Jones and you have Golden Tate there and you still have Abdullah, then it doesn't leave you a ton of pass-catching opportunities. And while Matthew Stafford is able to spread the ball around, I mean, you're still going to be at the best the number four option in the passing game, and that's saying that you are ahead of Eric Ebron, which I assume is very unlikely. So that puts you as the number five option, and in that offense, I just don't really know what you're going to be able to give. Maybe you give 600, 700 yards and a couple of touchdowns, but I can't see much more than that. I think even that's being a bit over the top. Do you think there's a realistic ceiling for him, Eric?
Well, and, you know, kind of like pretty much any of these, I mean, they are lottery tickets. There's high probability that they're going to bust. And like Evan said, he could be on the waiver wire again week three. I don't necessarily see him as much being, you know, clear down as at the fifth option overall. You know, Ebron still hasn't practiced since the end of July. You really don't have a solid running game with this team. Is there probably too much hype on Golladay? Yeah, I could probably see it, but you know, at the same time, you're getting a wide receiver that's in a pass-happy offense, and Marvin Jones was spectacular for about 6 weeks last season and then kind of fell off a cliff, and then it was Golden Tate the rest of the year. I just think there's going to be a little bit more to spread around, and he's a guy I'm definitely fine taking a lottery ticket shot on, but I'm not expecting him to, you know, carry my team as a wide receiver one or two, anything like at most. I think his ceiling this year would be a flex player, which if you're getting a decent flex player around 12, it's worth the risk.
I agree. Why don't we move into the last player that we're planning on talking about, and that's going to be Jonathan Williams of Buffalo. Evan, why don't you tell us what you like about Jonathan Williams?
Yeah, he's looked great on the field if you've been watching the preseason action. And I don't necessarily know what the legs on the LeSean McCoy trade talk are at the moment. I think a lot of people kind of think it's just smoke, but we have seen the Bills, you know, just sell off here and kind of go for the rebuild. So why would they keep around a running back? What, Shady's 29 this year. He's had the concussion injuries. He's had, you know, leg injuries. So I think Williams is an interesting kind of scratch off lottery ticket that, you know, maybe 12 team leagues as a last pick, I would be okay with kind of throwing that in. And, you know, once again, a guy that could definitely be back on waiver wires very shortly, but somebody that I think should definitely be on your waiver wire speed dial, and a better talent than what I think you're going to find later on down at the end of the draft. Like, would you take Connor over him?
So I would probably take Williams ahead of Connor right now, only from, assuming I'm not the Love Bell owner, but basically I could kind of see this turning into what, you know, 2015 was, where Carlos Williams got pretty good extended run in an offense and he didn't need a ton of carries to be super productive. You know, with the way the Bills are, whether there is any kind of validity to the trade rumors or not, you know, they haven't been afraid to utilize a two-back system prior. They even tried to do it with Gillislee a little bit last year, too, just to try to spell McCoy a little bit, just because of the amount of workload that McCoy generally gets. I still expect McCoy to be heavily used, but it wouldn't shock me if we were looking at another kind of Carlos Williams situation where, you know, he ends up getting, you know, maybe 10 carries a game, but he's rattling off 100 yards and a touchdown, which if you're getting that from a guy that you can pull in the 12th, 13th round, I mean, that's fantastic.
For me, I think that I'm more likely to avoid Jonathan Williams in terms of picking between him and Connor, just because I think that Connor's is going to have more usefulness on the season, just because while LeSean McCoy does have his own injuries in the past, I do think that he is still more likely going to be more heavily involved, and we have seen D'Angelo Williams at least be involved over the last few seasons to a consistent factor. And I think that because of that, you have to give the slight edge to Connors. I do like what Williams does bring to the table, though. It's good that Gillislee is no longer there, so it does give Williams some value, and he could be worth a flyer, but it almost just doesn't make a ton of sense.
Well, doesn't it make sense? Because, I mean, and not that Gillislee was a huge fantasy contributor, but by statistical measurements, there was a role for him last year, and he was productive in it. And why couldn't Williams, you know, take over that role and potentially get more if there are, you know, there's injury concerns about everybody. It's stupid, but I mean, Shady does have knocks on him for sure.
He does. I think that the offense overall is worse this year, so I do think that it makes it a little tougher to say that we are just going to be able to bank on a similar role being able to be given out to Williams. And while Williams is no different than Gillislee was in terms of where the trust factor is, it's not like he is less or more trusted just because he hasn't been around as long. But I just think that the offense overall will be worse this year, so it doesn't necessarily give Williams as much volume, and it doesn't give him as much value because of that.
Yeah, I'm still on the Williams train right now. For me, Connor, if Lev's healthy and he shows up, which supposedly now the magic date is September 1st, I'm not probably going to take Williams ahead just because McCoy has had, you know, like Lev Bell, similar soft tissue issues. But you're also going to see him get spilled probably more than you see Lev Bell get spilled overall. So I'd rather take Williams over Connor right now, but I could see the argument both ways, but my preference would be leaning towards Williams.
Okay, so the names going in front of Williams, well, listed in front of Williams on Fantasy Pros are Jamal Charles, Rex Burkhead, Giovanni Bernard, Jamal Williams, Darren Sproles, Latavius Murray, Jacquizz Rodgers, James White. Like, I'm moving higher in, like, towards the top of the board. I would take Williams over basically all of these guys.
Yeah, I'd probably take Williams over everybody, but I might
Jamal
take
Williams?
Jamal Williams from Green yeah. Bay over him, but that's yeah. probably about it.
Benjamin, do you agree with that?
Yes.
I like calling you Benjamin. So, I mean, are you ahead on Williams then? I mean, because, and not that Fantasy Pros is the end all be all. Connor's down here at 71, so it seems like the fantasy community at large is just lower on him in general.
It's tough because I haven't been able to watch a ton of the Buffalo games, two Buffalo games this preseason, but I do like what I have seen from Connors, and I think that I would need to review the tape of Williams before I could be able to actually make a fair decision. I just do feel that with the changes that the Bills have made, and they're clearly in a rebuilding mode, they've given up offensive and defensive players. I do think that they're going to be worse offensively, and it makes it a little tough for me to be able to take a backup on a worse offensive team. So.
But don't you think that in becoming a worse team that they kind of would have to switch towards more of like a dink and dunk high percentage type offense that could actually benefit somebody like a Jonathan Williams?
I think they could, but I think that they're trying to play for the future. And if they were to actually move McCoy, then obviously I'd be very, very interested in Williams. But I'm not even sure at this point what would happen in that aspect, and until I see a little bit more, it's tough to make that decision. All right, Eric, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
So I can be reached on Twitter at Mackey671FWFB, and I'm currently working through team previews right now. I've had four of them come out within the last couple days, so they're up out on the site, and going to try to get a few more hammered out here this week.
And what about you, Evan?
You can find me at EvFWFB. That's if not I win the lottery, I will still be available to answer all of your fantasy questions. I did a Game of Thrones podcast over at Razzball, the Razzbloods podcast, with my hetero life mate Matt Bowie, T. Hull Benedict, and Jay, which was pretty awesome. You should check it out. And I'll be writing a streaming defense column for them this year, as well as hanging out with Ben and Eric on the podcast here at FWFB.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. You can find the three of us on the Wednesday Football Show. We always will have rating reviews, especially with 5-star reviews. You can find Eric and myself on the Fantasy Basketball Podcast. You can find myself with Chuck Anderson and Evan as well on the Tuesday Baseball Show. And outside of that, I'm just looking forward to football season getting started, baseball season getting into the playoffs, and basketball season getting ready to start. So it's always a good time during the summer into fall. So until next time, from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great football off season, everyone.